Well, g'day everyone, and welcome back to the Hard Ball Gets podcast, where we're brought to you by our good friends at Mazda and the Mazda BT50. It's the complete package. And we're kicking goals on today's good chat with one of the most prolific and popular forwards in Eagles history. Let's get into it. Well, my name's Chris Robinson. Thanks for joining us once again on the Hard Ball Gets podcast. We've got another fan favourite guest with us. He kicked 389 goals in 179 games to sit fifth on West Coast's all-time goal-kicking list and just outside the top 100 in AFL-VFL history. And he did it all in spectacular fashion at a height of just 171 centimetres. He is Phil Matera. Phil, thanks so much for joining us, mate. Welcome.
No worries. Good to be here.
How is life these days, mate? Where do we find you? What does life consist of post footy for Phil Matera?
Mate, I live over in obviously in Perth, and I run a couple of businesses. One of them is an electrical contracting company where I employ about 120 staff, and we run a couple of gas plants for Woodside. One of them's called the Karratha Gas Plant, and the other one's called the Pluto LNG Plant. And they're based up in Karratha, and we have a team of electricians that fly in and out of there, and some of them are local Sparkies, and we run all the electrical maintenance and hazardous area inspections up there. So we've been doing that for about 7 years, and we've got a few more years left on the contract. And I also own a fruit and veg business, which I started about 8 years ago, and we supply fruit and veg into the mining sector. So we supply into companies like Compass Group and Sodexo and companies like that, and we supply, and then they on turn supply to people like Rio Tinto and BHP and FMG and Mineral Resources and big mining companies like that. And we feed them with the fruit and veg on a daily basis. And we also have a big greenhouse where we grow parsley, coriander and dill. It's about an 8,500 square metre greenhouse, and we supply, grow our own herbs. So it's pretty exciting times for me over here, which is good.
Yeah, okay. So keeping very busy. Yeah,
that's what I'm up to.
Keeping very busy.
It is busy. It's not so much very busy. It's just got a good group of, good team around us. And, everyone plays their role, and the companies, both companies are doing really well, especially with the mining boom that's happening out here at the moment, with lots of projects and lots of people are needing to be fed, but also the oil and gas. Most of WA is households have the gas that comes from up north. So, it's pretty exciting.
Of course. So probably not your typical post-footy career for a lot of the footballers. I mean, are there any sort of footy lessons that you can apply into those fields, sort of switching paths?
Yeah, look, I was pretty lucky. I left school at 15 and at the end of year 10 and did an electrical apprenticeship in a little country town where I grew up in Wagen.
Yep, you know,
1,500 people that lived there. And when I was ready to retire about 2003, I was lucky enough to be able to start my own business and then use some of the companies like Jack Cowan from Hungry Jacks was an absolute champion guy and was a big supporter of mine and gave me the opportunity to do some maintenance on quite a few of his Hungry Jack stores. We used to do the electrical maintenance, and so he gave me an opportunity to start the business while still playing football. And I sort of look at some of the guys that leave football now. I use my nephew Brandon as an example, who's just been delisted from Fremantle Dockers. Mm-hmm. Sort of unfortunately left there with not much skill. I've got him working for me, teaching him how to buy fruit and veg off the market floor out at Canningbar, which is like the Melbourne markets or the Sydney markets. He sort of goes there and buys us fresh produce for our clients on a daily basis. But, retiring from football and sort of going from $500,000 a year, let's say as an example, and then, ending up on $80,000 a year. So because you're working for somebody else, it's quite a fall from grace. Mm-hmm. And using my brothers as an example, both Peter, Wally and Brandon, really, they really didn't have the trade behind them like I did, which was really great for me. I used them as sort of examples of what not to do in terms of wanting to be able to work for myself and create some wealth and be able to sort of earn the sort of money we were playing footy. Because it does get very difficult for some players that can leave the game and not have much to do. So of being able to create quite a large business on both businesses to be able to enjoy life after footy. So I would encourage lots of the young footballers listening or people that are thinking about getting into AFL to make sure while they're playing they're actually thinking about what happens with life after footy and what footy becomes in terms of, you can't play footy forever. And
you really do need to think about that. You know, you might need to work till you're 65, and what are you going to do, and what are you going to like to do for the rest of your life? So I've been lucky enough to be able to create that.
Yeah, absolutely. How is Brandon finding that adjustment? As you say, it was obviously his footy career or his AFL career has finished up. He was a highly touted junior coming through the ranks and all the rest of it. How is he finding that adjustment with your help sort of guiding him through?
It's been handy for me to be able to look at, like, for him to sort of look at what we've done and what he's achieved. And look, he's starting at the bottom end of the scale in terms of, you know, not really having much to do, but he's got an opportunity to build himself a career within our fruit and veg business. And it puts it in perspective of what life can be like if you don't think about it. And suddenly you get delisted and, you know, thinking your career was okay, but then all of a sudden a new coach comes in. Unfortunately, he didn't fit the mould they were looking at. And yeah, it was a bit of a shock to the system for him. He's playing at Subiaco in the Waffle at the moment, which is, you know, a big step down from playing AFL. The training's obviously a bit different and you get a bit more flexibility in terms of work. But, it has been a bit of a shock to the system for him. But he's, you know, picked himself up and got him organised, and he's on the up and up, hopefully.
Yeah, well, certainly helping put Subiaco right back in that premiership frame. That's for sure. Mate, take us back to, you mentioned Wagen there. Obviously your background, take us back to your junior days. You've touched on Wally and Peter. What was it like for you as a youngster, sort of watching those guys come up through the ranks, starring, watching Peter in the 92 grand final? And how much did that sort of light a fire under your own career and your own aspirations to make it in the AFL?
Yeah, it was one of those things. I grew up with, you know, we've got 8 children in the family and 7 of those are boys. So I've got 1 sister. So we were pretty competitive in the backyard and we were always looking to be, to play footy. And we sort of lived in a street where there was lots of big families. We had a family of 8 and there was the Hansons across the road. They had 7. And then there was the Thompsons who had another 6. So there was a lot of kids in the street. So we were always playing sport and having a bit of fun. And yes, I did look up to my brothers. It was unreal. I remember when I was in 1980 when Wally first came to South Fremantle, and in those days there was Stephen Michael and there was Mark Bairstow and Nicky Winmar and all those type of players that were sort of in the Waffle at the time, John Rawsall, Glenn Jakovich, and they were all coming through, and it was really exciting. I used to love going down and just you could just smell the dinker rub and the liniment. It was almost like it was exciting, and I used to love going down there and just being able to, luckily enough, having a brother that played, to be able to get into the change rooms, because, you know, they'd have the bouncers on the front door and we'd get ushered through with my dad and we'd get to go down there and watch them warm up and sing the song afterwards. So it was sort of in the family for a long time, and there were a few of my brothers that were sort of could have been footballers, but they decided to take different paths. But yeah, it was exciting and watching them play. And then I remember, you know, Wally playing in the first ever AFL game for West Coast, and I think he kicked 2 or 3 goals. It was pretty exciting, and then obviously Peter came along, and I remember Peter getting when I first realised how good he was. Yeah, I remember him getting selected in an AFL VFL an AFL or a VFL I think it was called in those days a VFL State of Origin game. Mick Mulhouse plucked him out of the Waffle and played him in a State of Origin game. And he handled himself pretty well. And we were like, oh, man, he might get drafted. I hope he does. And then he did. And then we all saw what he did in the 92 grand final and then again in the 94 grand final. It was pretty pretty exciting stuff. And I remember when they won the 92 grand final, he got brought down and Chris Mainwaring flew the Channel 7 chopper down to the Wagen School Oval and landed, and the whole town came out. And it was like, it was like he was it was like the Beatles are in town when Peter rocked on. It was unbelievable. There were so many, and everyone was a West Coast Eagles supporter.
Of course,
obviously weren't in the AFL then. But and now, I reckon if it happened now, there'd be 50%, because there are a lot of people jump from being Eagles supporters to Fremantle supporters, especially in where we grew up. So it's a different world now with 2 teams in Perth, but. And both very different teams at the moment, with the West Coast sort of aging and Fremantle you're coming along with an exciting young team.
Yeah, definitely. Did you have to keep Peter's ego in check after that 92 grand final? It was one of the great individual grand final performances that we've seen. Was he just as humble as ever coming home? What was it like for a little brother?
It was actually quite amazing. His life changed overnight, really, when he won that North Smith. He was recognised everywhere he went.
Yeah.
He used to have this permed hair and obviously that fell out pretty quick. I told him not to perm it, but he didn't listen to me. it was so funny that his hair's falling out and he's hating it. And then he starts to shave it. Anyway, but he was an absolute legend. And walking around, and I remember going to restaurants and, you know, we'd go out for fish and chips or just go out for dinner somewhere and he'd be getting hassled. And he sort of became at a point sometimes where he'd rather stay home and not do it. But he was an absolute rock star. And I remember the best thing I ever did was we came up the next day after the Eagles flew back in. We went up to Subiaco Oval, and when he came off the plane and into the and they got back to the Subiaco Oval, he gave me the pair of boots that he wore on that particular day, and I've kept them all these years. And I got them bronzed the other year, about 10 years ago. I got them bronzed.
Okay,
I've got them in like an heirloom sort of, you know. An airproof box. So I've got them sitting at home, and they're a pretty special pair of boots. I've offered them to him, but he's never asked for them back. So they're sitting there, and they'll be handed down to my son, and I should really give them back to him, but he's living over in Victoria now, so he might lose them. So I'll keep them for a bit longer.
They were
pretty wicked at the fact that he gave me his boots after the game. And I tucked them away in a little plastic bag for years, and then I pulled them out and got them bronze. They look pretty cool, actually.
Yes, well, I'm sure they would go for a pretty penny if you ever wanted to get some money for them, Phil. I'm sure they would go for a decent amount.
Sure, they would.
Mate, yourself as a player, obviously quite different to Peter. I mentioned your height off the top, and it's obviously a question that you would have been asked many a time. But no one else has in the AFL era has kicked that many goals at the height that you were. How did you make it work for you, or how did you make it not be an impediment for you as a junior and coming through the ranks and for your entire career?
How do you do it? I don't know. I was a knee-eyed or a grasshopper, mate. It was quite funny, right? So I rock up down at South Amount, and John Todd is the coach, and this big guy that I used to watch as a young fella, John Doherty, came back from Carlton.
From Carlton,
and he was the full forward at South Fremantle, right? So I'm a little, I'm weighing about 65 kilos, playing in the forward pocket alongside him at South Fremantle. And I remember just him yelling at me all the time, saying, when the ball was on the ground, "You should have been there. It's gone over the back. Where were you?" And he'd tell me, "Get out of my way or I'm going to run through you and kill you." It was one of those quick, lessons in life about how to play in the forward pocket with a big bustling full forward, and where to go and how to get out of the way. So I think that year I might have kicked 60-odd goals. He might have kicked 100-odd or something. I can't remember how we went in the finals, but playing under his feet for that first year at South Fremantle really gave me an idea of how to do it, how to play the game. And I'd never really played in the midfield. So it was, I didn't really have the tank to play in the midfield, and the 25 wind tool today I used to smoke probably didn't help. but it was funny, right? So we're down there and I'm playing alongside him. And then I ended up at West Coast. I was lucky enough to kick 7 goals in a state game up in Queensland, playing up there, and I didn't quite win the best on ground medal, but it was pretty close. I told Toddy I wasn't happy, that I didn't get it. But that was when I sort of realised I could play at that elite level, you know. But then when you get to West Coast, I think I weighed 69 kilos, and I'm playing, you know, and I'm having to stand along John Worsfold, who's playing back pocket. Mm-hmm. We're doing all these club, you know, games, and it was and David Rapunda got drafted, sort of, and then I got to debut with Benny Cousins. You know, and we both debuted together against Geelong, his old dad's team. But how did I do it, mate? I think the first couple of years I couldn't kick straight. I think my first year I kicked 5 goals. I kicked 8 goals in 5 games or something. And the next year I kicked 33 or something. And I think Fraser Geary kicked 31 goals. And I think Peter Sumich won the league in goal kicker with 33 goals. So in my second year, I almost won the league in goal kicker, right? and I don't know how I won that five times at the biggest AFL club in WA or in Australia almost. So pretty proud of my efforts. But it was more about having, we sort of, Scotty Cummings came along and I was sort of, I remember Malthouse came up to me in 99.
Yeah, end of 98, start of 99, yep.
Yeah, and at the end of 98, Malthouse said to me, mate, if you don't get a kick this year, I'm going to delist you. I'll be looking at probably delisting you. And I was like, oh, my God. See, couldn't believe it. I was devastated. But also it gave me a bit of motivation to get better at the position. So instead of going off to Barcelona with the team for the end-of-year trip, I stayed and went and worked at my old boss, Reg Praddy's name. Bless his soul, he's passed away now. But he said to me, best you go back and learn how to be an electrician because you're not going to go any good either. This is what my boss said to me.
Right.
And he sent me to a place called Eneabba, right, which is about 4 hours drive in the middle of nowhere, and I'm working 40-degree heat wiring a crushing plant, right, and which is a big machine they use to crush dirt. Right. And I'm like, man, and I was there for like 5 weeks, and it really made me realise I didn't want to be an electrician
in
40-degree heat,
yes.
You know, working in the middle of nowhere. So I said, righto. So came back, Scotty rocked up, and then I started to get this rapport with him where he would – it was back in – it sort of reminded me back when John Dorotich was there. Scotty and I had this unbelievable nous about how to play against each other. I think I kicked 51 goals. It was the first time I kicked 50 goals, I think, or it might have been 49, something like that. It was pretty close to 50. And I was really, really excited about the fact that I'd found a mate in Scotty, and him and I became really, really good mates. And he used to protect me a bit with his body look after us a bit. And, then it sort of rolled on from there, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and it went on from there. It was,
We'll definitely jump into the Scotty era shortly. I need to ask you, when in this timeline did you give up the smokes? Was this before you got to West Coast? Did Mick know about the smokes, or had you ditched them by then?
I gave up smoking only about 10 years ago. So just after I played footy, I gave up the smokes, which is quite ironic, really.
So you were smoking throughout your entire footy career?
Yeah, right. And so did my brother, and so did a few other Eagles players. But it was just not a few, but a couple of other players that did it. I'm not sure why I did it, but I did. But it was obviously ridiculous. But
well, it's a hard thing to give up, right?
It was, and you know, it wasn't something that I really thought about much. I just did it, and it was something I did, I suppose. And regret it a little bit, but it is what it is.
Do you feel like it might have had an impact on how fit you could have become?
I'm not sure, right? Because if you think about my footy career and look at some of the people that get All Australian these days kicking 40 goals, right, or less than 40 goals. Let's look at Hayden Ballantyne, got All Australian kicking, 40 goals? I think Michael Walters might have got All Australian kicking 40-odd goals. I kicked over 40 goals maybe five, six, seven times. I made All Australian one.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Did the smoking stop me kicking goals? Probably not. Could I have kicked straighter? That would have been, you know, if I could change something in my career, I would have liked to have been a gun set shot like Mark Lacroix. I wasn't a very good set shot, but if you looked at Mark Lacroix's stats, he's probably had, let's call it 400 or 500 shots a goal. I reckon I might have had 700 shots a goal, something ridiculous like that. And if I'd kicked straighter, I might have kicked 400, you know what I mean? I think I might have kicked 389 goals. And,
.227 behinds, mate. I've got the stats here. So not a horrible clip by any means.
Yeah, but if you'd kicked an extra 20 of those, an extra 50 of those straighter, I would have kicked over 400, you know what I mean? I wish I just could have finished them off a bit better in the early days. But it's the cigarette thing was madness. Really, and I would never tell anyone that it's a good thing to do, obviously.
Yeah.
Probably pretty dumb.
For sure, mate. You mentioned you debuted alongside Ben Cousins in that 1996 game against Geelong. You guys debuted together, and then a week later, David Wiponda debuted. So a pretty handy three players for West Coast to blood in the space of a week or so. What are your recollections of those sort of early games, and how did you go with the Mick factor as well? Who's obviously a very intimidating coach from the outside. I'm sure he would have been somewhat intimidating for a young player just starting his career.
Yeah, it was. Mick was obviously a really, really good coach, but obviously he sort of used that negative psychology a bit on a few of us. And I was one of them. Wirra was only a baby, and when he came along, it was
16.
He was a forward line player, and then he used to have to play on me, and decided that changed him to become a backman, and obviously he learnt his craft playing on me. I tell him that all the time, and he knows it too. You make sure when you get him on, you ask him. He's a good fellow, Wirra, and obviously Cuzzy's footy career was absolutely amazing, and the three of us sort of came along when Guy McKenna and John Worsfold and my brother Peter and Dean Kemp and Chris Mainwaring and Glenn Jakubich and Muddy Waterman and Chris Wills, all of those guys out of the premiership teams were still there and were teaching us how to train and how to push weights and what was expected of us when we're doing time trials and what was expected of us when we came back from pre-season. And it was one of those clubs at the time which the way Mick ran things was just unbelievable. It was just such a wishy club to be around. And I was blessed that Fremantle decided not to take me and traded me for a couple of players or whatever. And I didn't end up going to the draft. And Jared Neesham gave me the opportunity to play with my brother, which was, a godsend. Because I always really wanted to be able to play a few games with Peter, which was great. But in that era, Cuzzy, myself and Wirra, and then I think the next year came Chad Morrison and Michael Braun, and we started to build a team, and then along come Guardy and Curry, and then obviously Juddy rocked up. So we started to build a pretty good team after the older guys were starting to retire. So we had the likes of Chris Mainwaring and then Chris Waterman and those sort of players started to sort of retire, and we needed to come along. But and then Judgy came in and sort of turned the place upside down a bit, and then we brought Woosher back to put it back together again. So.
Yeah,
it was an awesome time and a lot of memories. And when you're playing 10 years with players, and it's sad to see what's happened to Ben, but at the moment he looks like he's turned his life around, and he's out and about. He's back playing footy. Apparently, I haven't seen him for a while, but let's hope he can get himself keep on the straight and narrow now.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good to see him getting a kick. You mentioned the Scotty Cummings arrival for that 1999 season. So you kicked 51 that year and he kicked 95. That's still the only season in Eagles history where two guys have gone 50-plus. It really was sort of that odd couple combination, Cummings so big, bustling, yourself obviously quite slight. But you guys really found a way to maximise it, didn't you? Like, what was the synergy like between you two, and how much work went into planning who was going to be where, how to make it fit between the two of you?
Yeah, so Scotty would do things like if there was space in front of us, he would block my man, and then I would be able to, because in those days you could put a few blocks on in terms of I'd run my man past him, he'd step in front of him, and then I'd get a paddock to run into and take the mark. It's sort of, even though I was crumbing Scotty a lot, he sort of taught me how to present and lead. He sort of said, I don't have to be the one leading all the time. You lead. If you get the space, the boys can kick it to you, right? So, and we do it vice versa. I'd sort of park myself up on the half forward and run back towards the goal and try and cut his man off so he got out of the way and took the marks on the lead. And he had a beautiful set of hands and in terms of marking, and he had an absolute dynamite kick. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time with him after footy, watching how he kicked the ball and how straight he kicked the ball. So I took a lot of I've spent a lot of time with him after footy, after training, and we'd kick a lot of goals together, and we sort of had a bit of a really good friendship as well. So we both got on really well, which was great. And I think he's the only full forward that's kicked that won the gold Coleman medal that didn't make the All Australian team that year.
That's right. Yes.
So he's the only full forward in the history of the AFL that has won the Coleman medal and didn't get the All Australian team, which he
won it by 8 as well. He didn't just sneak home; he won it by 8 goals and couldn't make the team.
And they didn't give him and he was pretty dirty. I know I was pretty dirty too, because I'd kicked 51 first time. I kicked over 50 and didn't make All Australian either. So I had to kick, I think the year I made All Australian in 2003, I think I kicked 61 goals, and the next year 2004, I think I kicked 62 and only made All Australian in the 61 year. But if I'd kicked 62 goals you know, in this day and age, you'd be all the
time. Oh, absolutely. I was going to ask you about that one. Might as well ask you about it now. So that 2000, and as you say, you made it 2003, and then 2004 was the one where you missed out, despite kicking 61. One of the forward pockets that year was Luke Power, who kicked 15 goals for the season. So it was still sort of more in that era where they were just squeezing extra midfielders into the team. I mean, how much does that one still burn for you?
Oh, it does burn a bit. And Glenn Jakovic, I'll tell him every time. He was one of the selectors. Why didn't he get me into the team, you know?
Hang on. This is 2004. I think Jacko was in his last season of playing, so I don't think he was quite a selector yet.
It might have been someone from WA that was on there that wasn't real good. But he's a selector of the state team now, isn't he?
Yeah,
so maybe he can let you find out what happened. But I was pretty dirty. You got to admit, right? You're 171 centimetres tall.
And you kick 61 goals.
You play forward pocket all your life.
Yeah.
But you think about it. I kicked 51, 49, 61, 62 in about over 4 or 5 years and made all Australian ones.
Yeah.
If Hayden Ballantyne or Michael Walters kicked 61 goals twice, they'd be all Australian every day of the week. Right?
Yeah.
So it is a bit of a shame. But you know what? To make an All-Australian team in the AFL just once, I was pretty happy with it. And I think my brother made it 5 times, so at least I can say I made it once. So
yes.
Happy. And there were some pretty good footballers in that All-Australian team.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah,
mate.
And look, it's funny because, you go through life and you look back now and you think, you know, it would have been good to get to have it twice, but unfortunately they didn't think I was good enough that year. And I think I might have been the only forward pocket player that was playing full-time forward pocket.
Yes, very, very stiff, mate. I think they had another one of the spearheads sort of wedged into the other forward pocket, and then Luke Power, who, as I said, kicked 15 for the entire season. So very, very stiff, I would have thought. Mate, I want to ask
good
you about...
You
yeah, yeah, very good player, just not quite a forward pocket.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about a game in 1999, which has piqued my interest. I don't know if you remember it or not. You guys played the Bulldogs at Subi. You won handsomely, won by 72 points. This is the only 3 Brownlow vote game of your career. So you had 21, you kick 5. I don't know how much you remember it, but it also piqued my interest because it's the only game of your career where you registered a hit out. And I found that fascinating, especially considering that, as I said, you're up against the Doggies and their ruckman for the bulk of that day was Scott Wind, who was a Brownlow medalist. Do you remember this game at all? Do you remember the hit out at all? Was that a stats error? What can you tell me about it?
I don't remember it. But in those days, we used to have this ability for someone else to come up over the top of the
ruck. Third man up. Yeah.
Third man up. So I'm not sure. Maybe Liver was taking the ruck. He's playing on me, and I sort of jumped over him. I'm not sure, but I don't remember the game, to be honest. But yeah, it was. I can't really remember the game, but. But I would have thought, because Libby used to play me, or if I wasn't playing, it'd be on Kelsey in the middle, depending on who we're playing. But yeah, it might have been up against him for some reason. I'm not sure.
Okay. He did play in that game. I can't quite figure out if he was running around chasing after you. But no, I was hoping that you'd have a recollection of you just somehow got thrust into a ruck contest and out-muscled Scott Wine somehow.
Well, that sounds fair. I'll probably they would have bought a step ladder out for me to do it if I had to. But I really don't remember. It's a long time ago.
And so 2003, 2004, as you said, Wushard had come back to the club coaching you guys. You're starting to get into that sort of premiership frame. Juddy was becoming Juddy. And all the rest of it. Was that sort of the high watermark for you, those 2 seasons, the 62 and the 61, where you really did become the focal point of that attack and one of the best forwards in the comp?
Yeah, we didn't really have a full forward. We had Quentin Lynch, but he was learning the caper at that stage. And we had young Andrew McDougall, who was coming in out of the forward line. So, yeah, I used to play full forward quite a bit. And I'd end up playing on people like Dustin Fletcher from Essendon to just give you an idea of how some of the coaches used to. I wasn't a bad mark for my size. If you speak to someone like Tim Jepp, or Robbie Wiley, they'll say to you, you're a good crummer. But the one thing that I did have that was sort of class above most small forwards was that I could take an overhead mark and on the lead. So I used to use that to my advantage. And if I was on Fletcher, it was I I wouldn't ask the boys to kick it in the air. Obviously, I'd want them to put it out in the ground.
But, yeah.
I had a few games where I kicked, you know, two or three or four goals on him, but he would, if they kicked the ball along into the goal square, he would obviously outmark me. So, and then that went again against, I'd play Collingwood, they'd play James Clement on me. If I played against Adelaide, they'd put Ben Hart, so a bit taller guys with mm-hmm. a bit more height to try and restrict the marking. So I sort of went from a crumbing small forward in a couple of years to playing a leading full forward. So it was a bit different. I had to play the game a bit differently, and just because of the fact that we didn't really have although Lynchy was playing, it was a lot of the time I would sort of be saying, Lynchy, you should have been you should be leading there. It was sort of like it was sort of teaching him how to play, I suppose, in a little way, as a more experienced player at the time.
Yeah. So in that sort of era, Phil, what did you sort of prefer in terms of when you saw an opponent walking to you at the start of the game? Would you prefer seeing a bigger guy like a Dustin Fletcher coming to you, or would you prefer to see a smaller defender? Like, what did you sort of lick your lips at the prospect of more?
So, again, it depends on the ground, right? So if you're playing at Etihad Stadium, is that what they call it now, or Docklands, or whatever mm-hmm. it's called?
Yep.
When you play on a small ground like that, it was advantage for the tall guy, right? Because the ball are coming along, and
yep.
and guys like Enders would get the ball out of the middle and it would be in the forward line within, you know, just one kick. So, I would prefer to play on a smaller guy at a smaller ground, but Dustin would always play on me there, which
yeah.
was an advantage for them to be able to outmark me, being, you know, I'd have to be 20 centimetres short of him, I would have thought. But, he would be an advantage there. But if it was a bigger ground, I didn't mind a taller guy playing him because he wouldn't have the speed to turn him around. On a dime. So
yep.
it's a bit like if I played on Gavin Wanganeen, he'd play on me at Subi. To turn him around was hard work. It was wicked. It was a wicked challenge to play on someone like Gav.
Mm.
Because he was as slippery as I was. So defensively. And then if you get a taller guy on at Subi, you could sort of turn him, take him up to the ball, and turn him and get back and sort of outmaneuver him that way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're certainly certainly very good at it, mate. You made an absolute art form of it. I've got to ask you about the 2005 grand final miss. A really disappointing tale to not see you there in on the biggest stage. Can you sort of talk us through the story in terms of your fitness, the conversations with Woosha that week? You were obviously battling a groin injury, but were you confident that you would fit for that game? And how shattering was it for you to miss out on selection?
Yeah, it was obviously one of those days where I was pretty shattered. It's pretty much why I retired, to be honest. But It was quite funny if you've got a minute, I'll explain it. We were at the night before we had a training run at Susan before we flew out, and we were doing some drills and they were putting me through some fitness tests, and I was playing on Greg Harding, who was an assistant coach at mm-hmm. West Coast at the time.
Yep.
And they were pushing me around and pushing me back, and then Robbie Wiley took me up the other end and threw the balls around and was trying to see if I was fit enough, and I was snapping goals and I was doing everything that was asked of me. And then we went down into the change rooms and the forward line was having a meeting and I wasn't even invited to it. So and I'm walking around the change rooms and all of a sudden they're running around looking for a team sheet for me. So I sort of had an inkling I wasn't playing at that point.
Right.
So anyway, we get on the plane, head over to Melbourne. We're training at the MCG again. We did the parade, get to the ground and do a bit of a, we're doing a bit of a,
like a captain's run kind of.
We're doing a little quick MCG workout
yep.
before the game, before the grand final. And Wishy, after the training rest session, calls me into the middle of the ground and says, "Can you play, mate?" I said, "Of course I can play, mate. I'm ready to go. Give us an opportunity. I'm looking forward to it, right?" And then at that point, I thought, "Yep, I'm in the team." Mm-hmm. But then we get back to the hotel, and I get this knock on the door before the team meeting, and it's Wishy saying, "Look, mate, we're deciding not to go with you. We're going to play Travis Gasper, who, if you know who Travis Gasper is, he's mm-hmm. probably played about three or four games for the might have played 10 games for the Eagles over in his career, but
yes.
pretty injury prone.
Very different nice player to you as well.
Yep. Yeah, really nice guy. And I'm sitting in my bedroom and I've got my whole family there and I had to ring him and tell him I'm not playing. It was pretty tough. And then we had to go down to the chat, you know, with all the boys and sit there and then be told that I'm not, you know, the musher had to tell the team I wasn't playing. And then, yeah, that was it really. It was pretty shattering. But, you know, it's the coach's call. I got, you know, over the last 10 years I've learned to accept the fact that it was a, you know, it was his call. He was the coach. He made the decision and chose to not play us and we lose by a point or two. So unfortunately, I decided that if the coach wasn't good enough to play me when I gave him the fact that I could play, that I would move on. So I decided at 28 to pull the pin and probably should have played on and kicked over 400 and played in the premiership the next year, but didn't get to do that. So unfortunately, it was the way it ended. So move on.
So.
But you know, look, I've got no regrets with footy. My electrical contracting company at that stage, we'd started that in 2003 and we were going really well. It was my business was really going well, so I was pretty confident that I could step out of footy and be in a really good position in terms of what we were doing outside. I had a really good business partner, Dean Kearns, who's my best mate, and I'm still business partners with him today, 20-odd years later. So, and we've, you know, never had an argument, never, you know, so we've done really well with the business. I was pretty, you know, I'd had something to go to and I'd just moved on pretty quickly. I've never played another game of footy and didn't go back to the Waffle and play or anything like that. I just, I moved on. That was pretty much it. And I don't have any, you know, any bad regrets about it. And did I wish I'd stayed on and played in the 06 grand final? Well, who knows? I could have got injured and broke my leg during the year. You just never know. So I never looked at it like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just went on to a different life, and that's it.
Did it put a strain on your relationship with Woosha? The way that went down, Phil, and does any of that still linger around today?
Well, no, it doesn't linger around. So I actually just swum. You know, we just have this thing called the Port to Pub over here in Perth, and I swum in that with him this year, which was the first time I'd really spoken to him on a. You know, it's the first time I've probably spent more than 2 minutes with him, right? So over the last 20 years since the 05 grand, the 05 grand final, sure. Whatever it was. And I'm happy enough to talk to him. I don't hold any regrets for him. He made the decision. I've had to live with it, so was he, and move on. I didn't, you know, we've had Derek Kickett at Essendon happen to him, and you know, I'm sure there'll be people this year that thought they could play and didn't get a game. So it's, unfortunately, it was a bit of a, it was a bit of a dagger in the heart. You know, I'd played 179 games for the club and been there a long time, and for the coach to say, I'm playing this young bloke instead of you. It was pretty gut wrenching that it was. And you know, they obviously as a match committee had picked the team on the Monday night, right, or the Tuesday, and I wasn't a part of it, right. So, but they'd had to make a decision not to play what they thought was an injured player. They obviously said that you know, that they might have been at risk playing me, but that, you know, I'd certainly trained all week and was ready to go, but you know, it was just what it was. And, it's unfortunate I'm remembered for not being played in the 05 grand final, right? So I just wish it was, it didn't end that way, but it obviously did. Moved on. But, you know, and it's funny because the next year they win it and I still had a year to run on my contract, right? So I was still contracted to the end of 2006, I retired due to a hip complaint, which is what I did to move on.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. There was sort of at points during 2006, there were a couple of comeback, sort of potential comeback rumours swirling that you might be in a position to make a comeback. Were they simply rumours? Was there any sort of substance to that at that point in time?
I didn't have any conversation with anyone about it. I think a few people might have spoken about it, but I wasn't intended to play back. I would have never pulled the jumper on again for Woosha. There was no way I would have ever played for him again. That was what I walked away with. That if he was at the club, I wasn't gonna ever put the jumper on for him. Whereas all the other guys that played in the grand final and have been a part of his football career would say that he's the best bloke in the world, and he's a good person. I'm not saying he wasn't. I just wasn't going to play for him. And I don't hate him for it. I just wouldn't have played a game of footy for him. If he didn't, for him not trusting that I'll sit and deciding to play someone else, I thought, well, if he can't trust me as a, and take my word that I'm fit enough to play the game, and he decided to play a guy that relatively didn't play, you know, didn't play, hardly played a game of footy for the club at the time. And I hadn't been playing, I can't remember if he'd played in a game before that, before the grand final. I just can't remember if he'd even played the lead up to the grand final. I can't remember. But for him to get a gig on grand final day, and he's a guy that's played 179 games, like a life member, and to get told you can play, then that was pretty gut wrenching. Yeah. And it was more of a personal thing, right? So, I don't hold any grudges. I wouldn't have talked to him for 10 years afterwards, probably. But slowly come around.
Yeah.
And swam with him the Rottnest and had a few beers with him and moved on, you know.
So you feel like you're in a better space with that now?
I'm in a better space in terms of there's a lot of water going over the bridge, right?
Yeah.
So I'm loving watching my son play footy and my daughters play netball and, you know, and having some fun with that. So, yeah, and do I go to the footy? Yep, I go to the footy and all that stuff. But I don't, it is a bit of a sour point, but it is what it is. It happens, and I made the decision, and I've lived with it, and I've done pretty well by living with it. So I'm not saying it's the be all and end all, but it's just tough, you know, right? It's pretty tough when it happens to you. And I feel for the blokes that don't get to play that get left out in the grand final, because it's what you play footy for, right?
Yeah.
You've spent 10 years at the club, you know, you built a team. There's the Chris Judds and the Dean Cousins and all the boys you grew up with, Embers and what we were, and all those boys I played my life with. Yet the coach, you know, then I wasn't able to run out on the biggest stage of my career and play with them. So even though I thought I was fit enough to play, and I would have given it my left leg to be out there, but unfortunately, it didn't happen, brother.
Of course, mate. Well, so, you certainly. I was
here.
Gonna...
Here we are again, and every year at the bloody end of the grand final, some bastard from the media rings me up and says, "Mate, let's relive the 2005 grand final when you missed out. What did you feel like? How did you go?"
Yeah.
So it's forever locked away, right?
It's an annual counselling session for him.
It's an annual event, mate.
I was going to say, though, mate, you are certainly remembered for much, though, much, much more than that, mate. So you can rest easy about that one.
Yeah, and look, I'm to be honest, I've really felt that for my size and for what I've put into the game,
of course,
and for what I've, you know, got out of my footy career and what I can show my kids and how I got to play with my brother Peter and I got to live a life of for 10 years in something that I love doing, and to say that I'm a five-time leading goal kicker for the Eagles and I'm an All-Australian, I'm pretty happy with that, bud.
And you certainly should be, mate. It's a record to be very proud of. Last couple of questions, because I'm mindful we don't have you all day. You mentioned your kids there. How do we have any next-generation Eagles in that bunch, and how fulfilling is it for you to, having lived out your own professional sporting career, to see your kids come through, to help them, whether they want to do sport as a full-time career or not? How fulfilling is it to you to have that challenge of seeing them coming up through the ranks and enjoying the sport?
Oh, yeah, mate, it's awesome. I'm lucky enough to have Drew Banfield as the coach of the Swanee Tigers.
Fantastic.
My son plays. So he's down there, and we've got there's a sprinkling of AFL greats down there with Ash McIntosh and Mark Gale, and there's Mark Miranda and myself, and there's a few others that are down there just off the top of my head. So we've got a pretty good club, and Cooper's only in year eight. He's loving it. He's playing. He goes to school at Scott, so he plays footy on every Friday afternoon at the moment, and trains a couple of days a week. So he's woke up this morning. He hurt his finger at training yesterday, but mate, do I love it? Love watching him play. I love the fact that he thinks he's going to be an AFL player, which is something we all wanted to do. And I think you should ask any kid out there that's playing footy that's got the ambition will say that they want to. Does he have the ability? He's got a little bit of ability, so we'll just see where that takes him. And I'm not, certainly not pressuring him. I'd rather him be good at school and do something with his career first. But look, I hope he does. And my daughters, they're both gun netballers, so they're pretty cool. Taylor is She's 14. She's really good netball. And my daughter Jessica is 18. She's just she plays in the A grade netball team at Classics, and she's at uni at the moment doing commerce, mate. So life's pretty busy for us. So you might see her on a Friday, and she'll pop in and out of the house all weekend because there's always an A event somewhere. Mate,
yes,
right? There's always a party going on. They turn 18. There's something going on every weekend, right? So you just don't know what's happening, where they are, what's going on, right? You're just hoping they're turning up on the. There they are. They walk back in on Sunday.
Yeah.
You're home. You're alive. Right? So it's awesome lifestyle, mate. At the moment, I'm really enjoying my family life, and we're close group of five of us, and looking forward to the school holiday shortly. We're heading up to Exmouth, which is pretty good fun up there. So yeah, looking forward to it, mate. And hopefully, with the footy, we're hoping that the Eagles can get some players back and we can barrack for them. And
yeah. Well, that's my last question for you as far as the current Eagles concern. Obviously, coming off a really good win last weekend, just to get things back on track a little bit more. How closely are you invested in it, and who do you sort of love watching from that squad at the moment as a former player yourself?
Yeah, I'm sort of invested in it. We go to the footy quite a bit, but it's more of a I sort of don't watch any in particular. I don't mind watching Liam Ryan when he's out up and about, but I think that the Eagles just need a bit of luck with injury, and I think we've got the ability to shake it at the end of the year, but we've just got to see where we end up on the ladder in terms of where we get the second chance. But I love the club, love everything about the club. Really, it's a really good family club, and it's always inviting us past players to the footy. If you're a life member, you get to sit with all your life member mates and have a bit of fun. So. Yeah, I'm hoping that we can see ourselves get to the finals and see what we can do at the end of the year with the team. But I think the club's got some good young players in Brandon and those boys coming through. So we'll see. Oscar Allen's a talent and a half. I love watching him play. He could be anything in the next few years. So I'd love to see what he looks like running out of the square at some point. But he's going to be a mighty player for us over the years, I would have thought.
Yeah, well, it's about the one position he hasn't played in so far. So watch this space.
We've got big JK down there. He's obviously got that taken up for. Hopefully, he goes around again next year. But the only thing I do worry with the Eagles is that how far down the ladder do we have to fall before we get a team put back together that that can sort of take us back to the top? If we start losing Josh Kennedy and Herney and Bunger get leaves, and then we've got we've sort of got that nucleus, but I don't see anyone sort of any speed coming through the midfield at the moment. So I'm not sure where that's going to take us in the future in terms of in the next couple of years. Do we hit the bottom of the ladder and take up not the bottom, but do we go down again before we come back, or can we do well in the draft and pick out some mature players that maybe can slip in? I don't know, but it's a bit of a challenge. I'm not sure if Kelly, what they did there to hold us back a couple of years, but we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure your boy's got a bit of a turn of pace, Phil. 4 or 5 years down the track might be in a conversation somewhere.
You know what? He's got his mum speed, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
He's not too bad. He's got a little bit of pace, but he's a bit different to me. I'm hoping he'll be a bit taller, hopefully. So I'll put the sheep manure in his shoes every morning, in case he just needs to grow a bit more, right? So it's a hard life being a forward pocket that's 171 centimetres, especially when you're playing at somewhere like Adelaide Oval.
Yes.
And it's pouring with rain and the ball ain't coming in, and you're 10 goals down at half time. It's a lonely life down there.
Yeah, right? I'm sure it is, mate. But you certainly made it work better than anyone, as I said, at that height has done so in AFL history. So if anyone knows how to make it work, mate, it was certainly you. We'll let you go, Phil. Thanks so much for coming on, mate, and sharing some memories and sharing with the fans what you're up to. Sure, it would have been a great thrill for plenty of Eagles fans, and best of luck with everything, mate. You sound like you've got an absolutely packed schedule in your life now and sound very fulfilled. So it's great to hear. Best of luck with it all, and thanks for coming on today.
Yep, thanks, mate. All the best, and go the Eagles, eh?
Indeed. And thanks so much to our listeners. And thanks to Mazda and the Mazda VT50. It's the complete package. Don't miss the 2-minute warning back on Monday. Enjoy your weekend of footy and we'll chat to you next week.